Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 28th of Nisan. We begin with gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, to David Hackhauser for their help in putting the shiurim online and making them available to you. Today we're going to see a responsible from the Tzitz Eliezer in the 15th volume, Siman Lamed Hey, the responsible number 35, and it's about the question of can you create partnerships in terms of Talmud Torah, study, and maybe observance of mitzvot, where one person would do it and the other person would pay for it. It's dated the 28th of Nisan of Tavshin Mem Bet of 1982, and it's written to the Rav in Ashkelon, who had given the Tzitz Eliezer a volume of his responsa. It's called Shut She'ilat Chemdat Tzvi. It was the third volume, and so the Tzitz Eliezer says, so I went through it a little bit, right? So that's what he does. He gets these Sfarim, he goes through them a little bit, and then he feels, as we've seen on other occasions, others do as well, that responding is a polite way to do it. You read not all of it, but you read some of it, you find an interesting topic, and you respond on that topic, and therefore you show your respect and interest in this other person's work. And this was the topic that he chose to take on. There was a story told about Reb Chaim Volozh, the man who had written this Rav from Ashkelon, Rav Moshe David Velner, told a story that he had trouble with about from Reb Chaim Volozh. So he's going to repeat the story. He's going to try to understand and unpack the story. So this is in the original book in Siman in Ot Samach Daled. Story of Chaim Volozh is so. There's a version of the story that he had here, and there's another version that we'll see later on, which today is going to take the later version is more authoritative. It's about basically one guy offers to support another guy in learning. The second guy doesn't want to accept it. And the question is whether he's really obligated to. So the Tzitz Eliezer knows that there's a psak of the Ramah in Yeredeya Resh Mem Vav. That's where he talks about issues of Talmud Torah. Although Reb Chaim Volozh doesn't mention it, but clearly he knew Shulchan Aruch, where the Ramah says that a man can make a condition with his friend that person A will study Torah, person B will give him a parnasa, will give him a livelihood, and they will split, they will divide both. So the shach there explains that they'll divide it equally, meaning this is a partnership. So if a person, you know, today we don't have a lot of those examples of today. There are people who support Torah study and they say, oh, you know, I'm doing my bit because I'm supporting Torah study. So they may be big balei tzedakah. They may qualify as great, charitable, generous people, but that's not what this kind of agreement entails. This kind of agreement entails, and I've seen this elsewhere in like Jews of Moshe Feinstein as well, the agreement really entails the Ramah was talking about was that if person A makes, you know, $20,000 a year after taxes, so we don't have to get into that, he gives $10,000 to the man who's learning, and the man who's learning gets the $10,000, and he gives half of the reward for his Torah study to the other guy. He doesn't give it, but he asks Hashem to direct it, as it were. That's interesting when it's $20,000, but when it's, you know, let's say $2 million after taxes that person A makes, for this kind of arrangement to be applicable, it would mean that each of them would only take $1 million. Right? They're partners, right? And when you're partners, it means you share equally. So that's the story in the Ramah. Now, the problem was in the story that came before of Chaim Volozh is that the person who was studying Torah and was resisting accepting money wasn't really able to support himself. So without this arrangement, he was going to have to go and try to earn a living. So then already the question becomes much more interesting, because let's suppose the person A, the businessman, is very good at what he does, but it takes him so much time that he only has symbolic learning time, and that's not coming, that doesn't come up in this tshuva, so we won't get into it, but it seems to me clear that even if you have an arrangement where you're getting half of so-and-so's learning time, I think you'd have to learn some of your own for reasons we may see at the very end of the tshuva, but whatever that arrangement is. But let's say he doesn't have time for any serious learning, but he's making $2 million a year. Comes a guy, says, I want to share it with you, and I'll give you $1 million, you can be happy to talk. He says, I don't want to give half my Torah, but here's the challenge. Let's suppose this guy who's learning is at a point in his life where he's not going to be able to stay full-time in learning, however it works out, because of financial issues that come up, so he's going to have to go and make a living of some sort. So if he was going to go into chinuk, let's say you'd say, well, that's good because he's in Torah study and he'll make a living, he'll be in Torah study. But let's suppose his only option is, I don't know, become a cobbler, right? To become a shoemaker. And as a shoemaker, he's going to make $75,000 a year. He's going to have to work 5 hours a day. So then already you get this very interesting economic question, right? Which is better for him and for the Jewish people and for the world? For him to learn all day, and yes, he'll have to give up the schar of his Torah study to this other guy, or half the schar of his Torah study to this other guy, but he'll do all that much more learning. And at learning, I bet he's probably better at that than he is at being a shoemaker. That's the question that came up before Reb Chaim Volozhin. And Reb Chaim Volozhin seems to have postulated that, yes, he has to do it, because the overall benefit to him and to everybody else is such that it makes more sense to do it. And if he doesn't want to, because he doesn't want to give up his reward, then he's reducing himself in that way, right? He's not learning as much. And we'll see later on that there's a reward there that he can never get. But I think it would certainly be true that for the Jewish people it's not as good, because he's not learning as much, right? So it seems like, the story seems to say, his goal is to get reward for himself and not do what Hashem wants. We would presumably think that Hashem really wants the world to be filled with Torah. And if this person is expert at learning, is going to fill the world with Torah, then clearly that's Ritzon Bor'o, and therefore he should accept the financial wherewithal to be able to do so, to stay in learning full time. That's the way the story seems to play out. And this Rav, we don't hear much from this Rav, from the Rav who wrote the Sefer. The Tzitzit Ezra doesn't really take on what he wrote in the tshuva, in his own tshuva. So he just takes on the story. And he says, but that's not the version of the story that I actually heard from other people. So in that version of the story, that's Rav Chaim Volozhin Paskin. And then you could talk about that calculus that goes into that question. And it becomes an interesting question, because let's say the person countered, listen, I don't want to share half my Torah with you, and I don't need $1 million. I can happily make do on, you know, $100,000 a year, let's say, you know, whatever his family situation is, how many kids he has, and whatever. He says, I can make $100,000 a year. I want to, you know, share with you only X%. So that's a conversation you can have. But here's the version of the story that was found elsewhere. This was found in, this is, he found a small book. I don't know where he finds these books. One of the things that so surprises me about people like the Tzitzit Eliezer and the Revad Yosef in particular, a little bit of Chaim David Alevi was around the same time, and also of Bintzion Abba Bar Shaul, Rabbi Abba Bar Shaul, and others around the time, is the library that they had access to, let alone that they learned it and studied it and retained it. That's also very impressive. But I always stop there. In any case, he finds this small little book by Rabbi Eliezer Zelman Krayovsky, who actually has a little bit of a web page somewhere. I looked up just on a lark. I didn't think I'd find anything. I looked up G-R-A-J. I looked up the wrong spelling, but they find it for you. G-R-A-J-E-W-S-K-I. He was a Russian Rav who early in his life visited Eretz Yisrael. He was born in 1843, and like 1873, he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw some of the new communities that were springing up, and he got very interested in it, and very involved in it, and very concerned with it. He spoke a lot about it. And then at some point soon after that, I forget the number, the years, but somewhat soon after that, in England, there was a job opening for somebody to coordinate Aliyah and issues like Aliyah and things like that. And he came from Russia to there and was going to be based in Eretz Israel. He was hoping to be able to get that job. He was going to apply for the job. He didn't get the job. I don't know why, but he didn't get the job. But he did become a Rav in Liverpool. And that's where he spent, I think, a lot of the rest of his life. Also, always talking about the importance of Eretz Israel and going to Eretz Israel and these kinds of causes. So he's a Rav in Liverpool. And he writes a small little country's whatever it was about in general, but in the context of it, he tells the story, and he says he heard this version of the story from Shmuel Salant, who said he was, when he was in Salant, he saw this story, and they brought it to Rav Chaim Volozhin. The story that he saw was there were two brothers, that always changes because of their brothers, then there's even more reason to think that they should share things, and that one brother should care for the other in both ways. One was rich, and the other one sat and studied Torah, and the rich one would generally give, for a long time, gave his brother 3 rubles a week, which I think was livable, but was not half his income by far. And then after a while, the brother, the rich brother, says, you know, I don't want to give you 3 rubles a week anymore. In order for me to continue giving you 3 rubles, I want you to give me half of your learning, the reward for half of your learning. And the brother refused, and then they went to Rav Chaim Volozhin. And Rav Chaim Volozhin recommended him that, yes, he's allowed to sell his future Torah study if he wants to. He's allowed to make that agreement if he wants to. Rav Chaim Volozhin suggests to him, but why do you, don't just give in. Maybe you should just suggest to him, listen, you're making a mistake here because you're getting a great reward already. Right. In other words, I think the guy was going to give him more money. He said, you're getting a great reward for with your 3 rubles a week. You're supporting me. And in supporting me, there's a great reward for that as well, because there's a Gemara in Brachot which talks about women who don't have, in the Gemara's vision, any obligation of Torah study of their own. So the Gemara says, so how do they get any credit for Torah and for Torah study? It says the fact that they support their husbands and their children, their sons, in study, and they encourage them to do it, and they make sure that they do it, that's where they get the reward from. So nowadays, people wouldn't like that answer, and I'm not saying we should follow that Gemara. I'm not getting to the Gemara. It just comes up, by the way, it points out that there's a value in supporting Torah study that's a value of its own. So why, the brother could say to the other brother, why do you want to take away from my learning? For my reward, for my learning, and cut into my reward when you're already getting a great reward? In any case, whether or not they make that arrangement, Rav Chaim Volozhin also added, tell your brother also that there's a reward for learning mitoch hadchak, and that you don't get anything from. Right? When you support me, so you're not going to get, you might get reward for the Torah that I learned by virtue of the money that you've given me now, but you're not getting any of the reward I earn that by learning mitoch hadchak. So it's an odd comment to make. So, Sicily Ezra, when it comes to explain what's going on in this tshuva, he says, first of all, we understand from the question that it wasn't a question in general. It wasn't like a theoretical question. This is an important general point to think about in terms of halacha. Let's say you're talking to somebody, you ask a general question, they'll give you an answer, whatever the answer is. But those kinds of answers are too general because they don't always notice. In almost every situation, there are details that come up that don't get noticed, that are relevant to the answer that would be given for that particular instance. So here, part of, and therefore the answer that's given might not be as authoritative, not because the person didn't have the authority to give it, but they might not have been taking the time to think through every aspect of the question. But when you ask a question, halacha lema'ase, over a particular incident that's coming up, that gives you much more information to work with, because then you know that you're dealing with a real situation. The person who spoke about it was weighing all the factors that he was aware of and that he could see as being relevant, and that gives it much more authority. So in the way it is, that the reason why there's a pause to comment on this is that in the book that led him to start thinking about this story, they presented it as if it had been a question to Rav Chaim Volozhin, I think, about not a particular instance, but about a general theoretical question. So this says, when you look at this version of the story that we have from Shmuel Salan, it's not a theoretical question. It was an actual situation that occurred. And in the original version of the story, it sounded like Rav Chaim Volozhin said to the guy, you have to agree because it's going to help you be able to sit and learn all day rather than go out and have to work. But in the version that we have from Shmuel Salan, and it seems like Rishon Slav was an eyewitness of the situation or was around when it was going on, it seems like Rav Chaim Volozhin did not say that. It seems like he said, first try to bargain with your brother and say, you know what? You're doing good, okay? You're doing well already in terms of your reward. Hashem's giving you great reward just for supporting me in my learning. So don't change the arrangement because we're all getting good reward here. So why would we mess with a good thing? And why you try to, you know, why are you trying? There's something aggressive about it, right? If the brother's been giving him 3 rubles a week and the second brother's been doing just fine, there's a lot of reward, there's a lot of good feeling, there's a lot of gratitude. Now all of a sudden the brother comes in and he wants to say, I'm only going to do it if you give me half your reward. Let's say he'll up the amount of money. But he's forcing the learning brother to change the arrangement, to give up something that's really valuable to the learning brother for the sake of, it's not clear what, maybe some kind of theoretically more reward. So the first thing Rav Chaim Volozhin says is to encourage him to think about it more carefully, that the reward that he's getting until now is great, and if he has extra money, do other extra things with it. But why does he need to try to gain, you know, half of the brother's Torah study? So, you know, I don't know the brothers, and I'm not a psychologist, so I like to play one in the context of my mind and watching other people, but there is, when you think of it that way, something a little bit off here. It's almost as if the brother who is wealthy is upset that he's only got money, and he's upset that the other guy gets all this Torah study, and people know him perhaps as a Torah scholar, and in many Jewish communities, there's a respect that attaches to that, and maybe he's upset about that. So he says, you know what, I want half of that if I'm going to be supporting you. So there's something going wrong here. So the first step is try to encourage the guy not to change. Try to make him, let him maybe try to wake him up to the fact that he's doing a great thing right now. And yeah, maybe he'll be able to force his brother to cede more of his reward to him, but there's a cost to that too, because he's forcing his brother to cede more of his reward to him. If the brother refuses, and therefore it's a question of, this brother will no longer have any money to support him and he'll have to go to work, so then Rav Chaim Volozhin thought that he's allowed to and maybe required to agree to accept the money and to give up the reward. One possibility is that the reason Rabbi Chaim Voloshin told him to try to delay it, or try to convince the brother not to force him into this, is that there is a tradition. The Maram Alashkar quotes, has a source where he claims that Rav Haigon said that you're not supposed to do this. That this idea of one person supporting another person, then being partners both in the Torah and the money, he thought it wasn't true. He thought it shouldn't be done. And that the person learning should not give up that way. And therefore, that would be why Rav Chaim Voloshin said to him, you know, try to convince the brother not to, but if not, then you can rely on the Ramah. This is a beautiful phrase in the Sefer Ezer, Latzeit Biyad Ramah. So Ramah is usually, when we talk about the Ramah on Shulchan Aruch, it's Resh Mem Aleph, it means Ramosha Isserless. So that's Ramah. But there is a phrase in the Torah when the Jews leave Egypt, at the beginning of Barsha Bishalach, it says, Vayudim Yotzim Biyad Ramah, that's a Resh Mem Hey, and it means a mighty hand that Hashem took them out with an uplifted hand. So here it's a play on that word, let's say Biyad Ramah. That, by the way, there was another Rishon before the Ramah, Ramosha Isserless, there was Rav Meir Halevi Abulafia. And his name really is Resh Mem Hei, when you put together Rav Meir Halevi, and he called his commentary on, we only have on, I think, two, Masechtot of Shas, I think we have on Bava Batra Sanhedrin, he called that commentary Yad Ramah. So all that, so far, for the answer, explains what was going on with Rav Chaim Voloshin. He was dealing with an actual case, not just a theoretical case. In that actual case, he preferred the person not sell half of his Torah study for the benefit of half the person's money. He preferred that they might try to find a way to keep the arrangement where he was getting supported, and the person supporting him was getting reward as somebody who supports Torah study. But under pressure, if there was no other way to do it, then yes, he thought he should accept the agreement in order that he should be able to stay and stay in Torah study. But one last piece of the story that Eliezer is not yet comfortable that he understands is that why does Rav Chaim Voloshin make sure to tell this learning brother that he should make sure that he has to be clear with his other brother that maybe they'll be splitting most of his Torah learning, but the part of his Torah that he learns mitoch hadchak, that he learns even out of financial pressure, and he still nonetheless stayed in learning, why that he can't get any reward for that, what's the reason for that? So that was bothering him in the story, right? The story is, Rav Voloshin is trying to make an agreement. If you can't make an agreement, accept his conditions, but make sure you make clear to him that he doesn't get the reward, he won't get any share in the reward, in fact, this brother would have been willing to learn when finances weren't so simple. I mean, let's suppose for a second, the 3 rubles doesn't keep you rolling in money. 3 rubles a week. Make sure you have what you have. And if some emergency comes up, you'll have to look around for help with the emergency. You're just scraping by. So there's a reward for the willingness to scrape by that way. Now, personally, I think it's only if that's the only way you can learn. It's not clear that that's the best way to do it. But let's suppose there's a reward for scraping by. The reward isn't for scraping by. The reward is for being so dedicated to learning that you won't let the fact that you're not so financially comfortable get in the way of your learning, and you'll make do with less, and you'll be happy with less, and you'll learn even with some financial pressure. That reward, this brother can't in any way get. So why is that so important for him to make that point? So the Tzitzit says, you know, it's from learning your book that it helped me understand that. I've long thought that about that question. I was learning your book, and the phrase is, you, a meritorious person, brought me the merit of understanding better. Because while I was looking at your book, I was reminded, it came up in the book, I think, of a Rashi in Sota Chaf Aleph Amin Aleph, which, yes, comes up in the book, in the beginning of the book, where the Gemara says, the Kiati of Dimi Amar Hillel Vishevna Achei Hayu Havu. There were 2 brothers, Hillel and Shevna. Hillel learned Torah. Shevna worked. And then Shevna said to Hillel, you know what? Let's split everything. So as they're talking about Yatzta, this is what the Gemara says, Yatzta bat kol, v'amra im yitin ish kolon beito. There's a pasuk in Shir Shirim chapter 8, pasuk Zayin, yitin ish kolon beito be'ahava, Boz Yavuzula. If a person, if a man gives all of the fortune of his house for literal meaning would be love, then they'll mock him. They'll make fun of him for a poor choice. So the Gemara seems to be saying that the willingness, if Hillel would go along with this and would give up Torah and the schar of Torah and the reward of Torah for some money, that would be showing an inappropriate set of values. So Rashi says that there. Hillel had been learning Torah mitoch oni rav. He had been very poor, but getting by, I think getting by. So the fact that he's now going to give it up for money doesn't, in the Gemara, seem to be okay. So the, first of all, that story seems to contradict what Chayav Lashon was saying. And then also, why does Rashi stress, this is a question that Eliezer raises, why does Rashi stress that Hillel learned out of Oni Rav? Why not just say, Hillel was learning and was comfortable, right? And now he's going to get rich off of his brother, and we mock him because why would you give up half your reward of your Torah study just for a little bit of extra money when you were doing just fine? So Rav Yosef Karo, who wrote the later wrote the Shulchan Aruch, has some Tshuvot as well, a book of Tshuvot, a responsa, called Avkat Rochel. And in Avkat Rochel, he suggested that if not for the fact that Hillel had been poor, in fact, he wouldn't have been allowed to make that condition. Because if you have enough to get by, then it is something negative to think that you want to get more money out of somebody, and therefore you make that condition. And he also stressed the Yosef Karo in Avkat Rochel, because the importance of the poverty was that the brother, the rich brother, wants now also, when he's giving him money, he wants also some share of the reward of the past. Meaning Hillel learns, let's say, 10 years, and he's struggling, and life's hard, and let's say in that time, the brother who's working, Shevna, let's say he doesn't think he has the money to really support. He's not yet comfortable enough that he feels like he can take on another family to support. So he doesn't talk about it. Now he comes, he's wealthy enough, he's hit it big, and he comes and he says, okay, I'll support you from now on, but I also want a share of the reward you got for all those years when I wasn't supporting. I want you to sell me that, so I'll support you going forward, and you'll share what's coming forward and also what was in the past. And then I'll give you furniture and I'll, because Hillel has nothing. And so that's what the Avkat Rochel suggests was going on here. And now Tzilezer says maybe that Chaim Volozhin was saying that that's what Rashi meant to say. That the Batko would criticize Hillel for the pot if he were to choose to sell what was in the past, because you can't sell what was in the past. What you learned in the past is yours, and that learning mitochat chak is something you can or should sell, because that's something very special. It's a show of your dedication and your sacrifice for Torah study, and therefore that's what Chaim Volozhin said. It's true, you can give half the reward for your learning to your brother, sell it to him for supporting you, but anything that's a special reward for the effort you put in of learning when you were poor, that's the kind of stuff that you should stick to you, because that's a mark of dedication, not just the learning, there's all the dedication and the toil that went into it, and that's a whole new kind of merit that somebody should never give up just for money. Then the Tzitzit points out that aside from the Chaim Volozhin, this Rama, you have it there, but the Netziv and Shut Meshiv Davar, so he quotes the Rama, but he's very against the idea of selling one's Schar Limud. Although at the end, he agrees that you can make a condition for the future and it works. But, I'm sorry, and the reason it works is that the person's giving him more comfort and more ability to learn and not have to worry about financial things, and there's a value in that. That's the value that the brother is getting. I mean, the Tziv is very uncomfortable with the idea that person A learns, and person B gives money, and person B gets reward for learning. So it gets, right, as if he did the learning. So the Tziv is sort of seeing him to imply that, no, he's getting the reward for giving A the peace of mind and the freedom of spirit to be able to learn, and that's what he's going to get for that. But then this says, but listen to what he wrote, the Netziv, in another sefer called Imre Bina, where he was asked by a certain rich man about this idea, and he goes to explain that there are different kinds of reward. And this is what the Netziv says, that there's a reward for the action of a mitzvah. There's a reward for a mitzvah itself. Every mitzvah comes with a reward, and that's just the reward that Hashem gives for it. But then the action itself brings results and rewards, and that's not the kind of thing that you can give to somebody else. So therefore, the Netziv suggests that, yes, the schar that comes from having done an action of Torah or mitzvah, so that you could probably share with somebody else. But what comes from the actual action itself, that's impossible to do, and it's not the kind of thing that you can give to somebody else. And the parallel, the analogy that the Netziv suggests is, let's suppose somebody drinks or eats, right, to quench their thirst. Is there any way that you can imagine another person benefiting from that or getting half the reward of that? So it's not clear in the words. I mean, Tzitzis is quoting it because he's very moved by it. He actually closes the whole quote by saying, "Hadvarim nechmadim mizahav and pasrav, they're better than gold and beautiful jewels, and they're sweeter than honey." And if you go into it, you'll understand it. And every tongue that tastes of it will say, "Oh, I want more." So he's really very moved by it. I think what the Netziv is getting at is that, let's say, you know, there's this famous Rambam. This is me talking, not the answer, but I think it's a good analogy, a good parallel. There's a Rambam that talks about the fact that in terms of character development, it's better to give a dollar to 1,000 poor people, deserving poor people, than it is to give $1,000 to one poor person. Not that the stuck effect is better. That's not what he says. What he means is that in terms of me shaping my character to be a person who gives, it does it more, because the more times I do something, the more it shapes my character. There's a whole discussion you can have about that. You can say, but bigger actions have more of an effect, but that's fundamentally the position the Rambam takes. But in terms of shaping character, the more actions we do, the more it is. So this is what I think this is pointing out. When a person does a mitzvah or learns Torah, there's two elements to it. There's the fact that Hashem said, please do this, or commanded us to do this, and said, and if you do this, I'll give you a reward. So that reward is a gift from Hashem for having performed and fulfilled Hashem's will in the world. That is the kind of thing that's not inherent to the person or to the act, and therefore that could be shared. So Hashem says, I want people learning Torah. I say, I'm going to learn Torah. You say, I'm going to give you half my money, and you're going to give me half your reward of Torah study. I can do that in terms of the reward that comes from the fact that I'm fulfilling Hashem's will and learning Torah. But there is, for example, no way that I can give you the Torah knowledge that I acquire. And it's not like, let's say we do this half and half, we do this our whole lives, we're both happy with the arrangement, we do it sincerely. It's still going to be true that the person who's involved in business will know a lot about business, might be expert and excellent at business, might do it really, really well. That's what he'll know. That's who he'll be. And the person who's doing learning will be a person who knows a lot of Torah. That's what he'll know. That's who he'll be. So that's the point, I think, I'm pretty sure, that's the point that Netziv is making, that when it comes to selling things, you can't think that you can sell the whole thing, because there's an element to it that it adheres to the person who does it. So too, if one person goes around to hospitals and visits the sick and encourages them, makes them feel better and saves lives and this and this and this, another person can be the person who says, I'm supporting you, and they can both mean it and be totally sincere about it in the most beautiful way. And they'll both get reward, and the person who's supporting it will get half the reward. But this is saying that half the reward is the half the reward that comes from Hashem as a reward for the action. But the actual result of the action, the impact of the action on the person, which he calls the schar of the pu'ula itself, that will stick with the person who actually does it. So there's something there to think about. Then I think that Tzitzil Ezer is trying to say, and that might also be the piece of the tziv that the Chaim Volozh was talking about. The piece of learning that comes from learning mitoch hadkak, you can't sell that, because that is the person himself, his dedication, and that's the kind of thing you can't transfer to somebody else. Happens to Shlomo Kluger, in a book of his response called Tuv Tam Vadad, took the opposite position. He said, he doesn't think you can share mitzvos, the reward for mitzvos at all, because the reward for mitzvos aren't yours, really. Hashem told you to do a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah, Hashem gives you a reward. There's nothing there that you own to say you could sell it. It's only by virtue of the fact that we say that once a person learns Torah, that Torah becomes his in some sense. That's a whole discussion in Gemara, but the Gemara says somewhere, I'm not looking it up right now, but that it starts out as the Torah of Hashem, and then after a person learns it, absorbs it, it becomes his or hers today in some way. So Shlomo Kluger says that's the reason why you can sell the reward to it, because it becomes somewhat yours. Now, theoretically, that should mean that you could even sell your past Torah study, but the answer had already held that even though the consensus of people was that you can't sell past, you don't sell going forward in the future. So we, to close up with the answer, we will go beyond Rama. We'll follow Rama that the past you can't sell. If you want to make a condition about the future, a person is allowed to make the condition. And then he closes with a bracha. And then, something that I really only mostly noticed in the Tzitzit Ezer, he adds a postscript, Bishulei HaTshuva. This whole idea of Bishulei HaTshuva is I think, more characteristic of him. I looked it up once. I think it's much more characteristic of him than other Achronim, than other Mishivim. He says, I also want to quote, there's an Orach Chaim in, the Orach Chaim is a commentary on Chumash, a very well-known commentary on Chumash, but he had a book called Rishon Litzion, and he listed there different kinds of support one can accept for one's Torah study. One is, that's completely acceptable and perfectly fine, is that one person goes out to find food, the other one learns, and they share everything. That's like Shimon and Azariah. We call it Yisachar and Zvulun, but it's 50-50. Second is that a person learns and he gets stuck up, and that's not as good because you're not really supposed to accept stuck if you can avoid it, although today people don't always remember that. And the third is that he has two paths to choose. One path to choose is he can support himself and learn part of the day. I apologize. I pause because that term part of the day depends on people, and different people have a different sense of what part of the day means. And the second possibility is that you don't work at all. You take donations from one person or many people whose spirit moved them. And there, the Arachayim says, Al ze amru, gadol anene miyigiyo. It's better to support yourself by your own labor rather than taking money. So that's the Arachayim's position. The Arachayim's position is, you want to make a partnership with somebody and you're both going to share equally, that you can do for sure. If you're at the stage you didn't get stuck, that's not so good, you have to accept stuck. If there are people who want to volunteer, now I want to say on that word, want to volunteer, but in many of these situations you have kololim and yeshivos send people around to collect money to be able to support the avrechim. So it's not what people want to volunteer. People are pressured to volunteer. That's a whole different topic that doesn't come up here, so we won't get into it. But there, the Arachayim says, it's better to work. Since the Ezra says, "V'zaya bismanim," that was in their time. But nowadays, when people don't have the head for learning anymore that they used to, and even to know the basic halacha, most people don't know, even if they would give all their time to it. So therefore, he says he thinks it would be better to learn all day and to accept the money. I think he would agree, though, that it has to be voluntary contributions, and that's where he ends it. So, for the 28th and the Sanya, the Tzeliezer, having a discussion of accepting money for learning, it started with the question of partnerships, and then the question of how much in which parts of one's Torah study one can share, and the calculus of when one is going to learn all day, whether or not it's better to accept money from others, or it's better to work a little bit and give up that learning time for the sake of being able to support oneself. And that's a complicated question because of the question of how much you learn, how much you don't know, and things like that. But those are some of the issues that came up in our Responsible Day for the 28th of Nisan. I thank you for joining me. I thank Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hachazer and the OU.org for hosting the Shirim. I hope you have a great day.